First of all, why are you running?
Why am I running? Well, as you look at all the races across the country, it looks like there's a lot of people lining up to make a statement. I think that's making a statement that the direction of the Congress and especially the president needs to be contested. We need a better way. And, like, we have three great candidates in the 18th district here right next to us. The 13th district has five candidates. And I am glad to be part of that message that's being sent that we want a different direction. And the three of us that are running in the 18th here, we're all very different. I think the other two fellows are great candidates, and so people are going to have a good choice and to send a message.
And what is that message? What direction do you want to see, I guess, the nation or the district headed?
Well, I'd like a little bit more thoughtful direction. And I know everybody talks about more bipartisan work. I certainly intend to do that. There's a wonderful group of congresspersons, the problem solvers, that are trying to coalesce and make a good size middle as a way forward on many issues in our country. They've come forward with some good proposals on immigration and on health care to try to push through, but the edges keep holding us back. And I'd like to be a part of that, making a difference, pushing issues through.
Yeah, what do you think you as a congressman could do to perhaps end this extreme partisanship that we see in Congress where it seems like compromise is a dirty word?
Well, I mentioned the Problem Solvers Group, and I think that's a very good vehicle. My approach is to here are my ideas. If you have better ideas, put them on the table, and let's work this out. Just for example, the president's proposal on immigration, I think the Democrats should pick that up and return an offer to if we're going to move away from chain-type migration, that's fine, but we shouldn't lower the rate of immigration. There's actually the president of the Minneapolis Federal Reserve Bank, Neel Kashkari, has said that if we would increase our green cards by 1 million people per year, we would get as much growth in GDP as the tax cut, and we wouldn't have all the debt. Those are ways to go forward together, I think, and I would work in that way on a lot of different issues.
What do you think is the biggest challenge facing the 18th Congressional District, and how would you go about addressing it?
Well, of course, economics are an issue. Thankfully, the job growth and wage growth has finally started to pick up. After many years, we've picked up a half percentage point in wage growth in the last year. But like the rest of the country, I think we are, as the 18th District, need to be worried about our federal deficit. And that's why I'm very disappointed in the tax reform that just went through last December. We've all been looking forward to tax reform for years and years. Since 2010, there's been about five, at I count, tax reforms that have been put on the table. And they've all agreed on one basis, and that is broaden the base, lower the rates, and be revenue neutral. And after going through this for all these years, the Republicans have finally jettisoned being revenue neutral and have baked in this big deficit for our country. And I have a proposal, other people do, to have a revenue neutral tax reform. The Treasury, just last week, there's this big article in the Wall Street Journal, said that it plans to sell 85% more bonds this coming fiscal year than last year. You know, that's getting close to 100%, almost doubling the amount of Treasury bills that you sell. That's debt. And the Treasury wouldn't say it because it's partisan, but the CBO is not partisan, and they said it's because of the tax reform bill and the deficit. And the bond market is already reflecting that, and that's going to affect those of us in the 18th district just like anyone across the nation.
How would you go about making a tax reform bill revenue neutral?
Well, about a third of the deficit that's created by the tax reform is from corporate tax reform. And we needed corporate tax reform for our global corporations that have to compete internationally, because over the years, other countries have lowered their corporate rates and left us standing as the sole country with a very high corporate rate. Now, those other countries who lowered their corporate rates, they replaced their revenues with other taxes, mostly value-added taxes. But the Republicans, they lowered the corporate rates and replaced them with deficits. And that's a very bad idea. I am going along with a proposal. It's a bipartisan proposal by the American Enterprise Institute and Tax Policy Center to lower corporate rates even more to 15% and then treat capital gains and dividends as ordinary income. And this becomes revenue neutral. So that's the benefits of it. It's revenue neutral. It's bipartisan. People sat down across the table and talked to each other like Congress is supposed to do. And this approach also doesn't necessitate the pass-through reform that went through Congress. This pass-through reform is just about the biggest mess you've ever seen. People's heads are spinning. They're trying to figure it out. For instance, if you're an architect on a building, you get this special 20% deduction. But if you're an interior designer on this building, you don't, with a business, you don't get this 20% reduction. Lifelong CPAs are just scratching their heads. How are we supposed to make sense of this? And people are going to be fighting about this, and it's going to be litigated in court for years and years to come. You don't got to do that. If you tax capital gains and dividends as ordinary income. Now, it's easy to justify taxing dividends as ordinary income. In this plan, you basically do away with any double taxation issues. Capital gains is a little trickier. I don't think you can go ahead and tax real estate as ordinary income like you can equities, because real estate is paying property taxes every year, even when it's not generating income. So I would tweak that plan like that. But that's a bipartisan plan. I want to get behind it and say we need to be revenue neutral on our reforms and not dig a hole.
Can you give us an idea of what you would like to see included in the next farm bill?
There's a long list of things that call it a wish list. In the next farm bill, a better dairy program, better cotton program, higher PLC prices, a foot and mouth disease vaccine bank, and a few others. And it's been made very clear there's not going to be any more money. So how do we do all this? A couple things. I think we need to pick and choose what we want to focus on. I would suggest doing away with ARC and PLC, acre revenue coverage and plus profit loss coverage, and focusing on higher loan rates. The Title I programs, ARC and PLC, you have to wait a whole year to get that income. It doesn't help a bit with cash flow, and ARC isn't working the way it is today anyway. So the Farm Bureau has a good program to have floating loan rates. I'd support that. And I would also support capping the premiums that a farmer can get on their crop revenue premiums. That's a controversial thing. My point is that any government subsidy we get is going to be built into or capitalized in the assets that it's subsidizing. So our land price and rent price go up some marginal rate with that program. Now, we accept that as a side benefit of getting crop insurance subsidized, but there should be a cap on that. It shouldn't be endless because it does give bigger producers more of an advantage over smaller producers, and we need to keep more farmers on the land. Now, people object to this. Sometimes they say, well, you're going to have a riskier risk pool if you do that because maybe some bigger farmers would drop out. My answer to that is there is no evidence that a large farmer is less riskier than a medium-sized farmer. You ask any 1, 2, or 3,000-acre farmer if they think they have more insurance claims than a large farm, and I think the answer is no. And, in fact, there's a managerial accounting company near St. Louis that does accounting for a lot of farms, and they say, if anything, large farms might have more insurance claims than smaller farms. So I don't think there's any worry on having a riskier pool if larger farmers decide not to take crop insurance. And it kind of runs against the narrative that crop insurance is such a good deal if large farms walk away from it.
You think programs such as SNAP should be included in the Farm Bill?
Yeah, that's been that comes around every time Farm Bill comes up, and there will be no Farm Bill if a supplemental nutrition assistance program is not in the Farm Bill. And we call it a Farm Bill. It's really a food bill because the SNAP payments are 75%, 80% of the gross dollars that go through that program. And SNAP payments, with the economy improving, have gone down. So those are a cyclical program, and they do seem to work. When people need them, the payments go up, and when people don't, the payments go down.
Do you think we need a smaller federal government?
Actually, I do, and I base that on an old proposal, if 2010 is an old proposal, and that's the Simpson-Bowles deficit reduction tax reform proposal. I think the Simpson-Bowles proposal is still the gold standard for how to reform taxes and lower the deficit. And part of their proposal, they propose things that we think are draconian now. And part of that was freezing the federal workforce. And it may seem extreme, but the measures that the Simpson-Bowles proposal took were extreme. I mean, they even cut military spending and reformed Social Security. And I don't see any departments that need to be zeroed out, as some Republicans would propose. But the workforce should be restrained just like any type of spending.
What role do you think the federal government should play in K through 12 education and in higher education, for that matter?
Well, in K through 12, I like to keep that local and statewide. Actually, as far as dollars go, the biggest money that the federal government provides for K through 12 is lunch program support. And I certainly support continuing that because it's almost hard to come to terms with that there are segments in our population where children are so disadvantaged that they need nutritional help just to function well and to learn well when they come to school. And it's almost a measure of what kind of district you're in. Some districts will run as high as 70% in the subsidized school lunch program. And I support the federal government's involvement in that. Higher education, I still support the basics, which is student loan program and Pell Grants. And I just don't understand why it's an issue that a student loans can't be refinanced to a more market rate for the students that hold them.
Yeah, is there something the federal government could do to help college students, help college graduates with their student debt?
There is a there have been proposals that you restructure these, that a student with a loan would pay a cap on their income. So whatever you want to make it, 10% or 12%, that's the most you'd pay for your student loan. And after 15 years, the balance of that would be forgiven. And that's basically a variation on a European model that they use in Europe. And if you look at gross dollars that it costs the government, it doesn't cost that much. I think the figure is something like 15% of those loans end up being forgiven. And it's something that President Obama pushed, and I think it's something we need to continue to keep working at, to keep putting people through our university systems, because it's actually declining, not going the other way.
What about immigration reform? Is there a particular program that you support, or is a particular direction you'd like to see the country go with immigration reform?
Well, I think all of us are just saddened that this thing is still going on. I was a candidate for Congress 4 years ago, and we thought in 2014 we were on the verge of solving this. In 2013, the Senate had passed a good bipartisan immigration bill. And in the spring of 2014, the Republicans had committed to getting one done, and then it blew up and didn't happen. And we're still going through this. The DACA young people, we all know, are literally being held hostage to get other changes in the immigration system. I'm a get-things-done kind of guy. Let's take the president's offer, and let's offer back higher immigration levels in exchange for changing family immigration. A more merit-based immigration system is more like what the rest of the world uses anyway. But we need to get this done. Let's go along with money for the wall. Nobody is ever going to really build a very substantial wall anyway. From a cost-benefit analysis and effectiveness analysis, it doesn't make sense. We do need border control. But if we had a better visa system, we wouldn't have near the illegal immigration problem we do. One reason that we do have the illegal immigrants we have is because we have an economy that will absorb these immigrants in certain sectors. We need them because of the current climate. Less and less migrant labor is available, and we are literally bulldozing orchards and not planting produce crops because we can't get labor to work those industries. And it's the same in a few other areas. We do need skilled workers. we need to look at possible abuses in the H-1B program. But we need to come to the fact that – come to the realization in this world, we do need a certain amount of immigration, and we need to make that work. We have a – at a university like this, it's still a problem when people from other countries go through our university system and they get degrees in areas we need, whether it's science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. It's still hard for those young people to use that education in this country. And that's such a no-brainer, and it still doesn't get done.
What about the so-called dreamers? People are brought here, you know, 1 or 2 or 3 years old, and this is really the country they know. This is what they call home. Is there would you support some sort of more clear and easier path to citizenship for them?
Well, I support a path for citizenship, whether it's 5 years or 12 years is what the president proposes. What they need right now is legal status. These people that came here as very young children and have lived their formative years here, they are basically Americans without citizenship. Many of them don't even speak the language of the country their parents came from. And I don't – it's hard to say no-brainer because apparently it's not a no-brainer. There's wide support for giving these people legal status, but as I said earlier, they are being held hostage for other reasons, and they literally can't plan their lives as long as this thing drags on. This should be solved as soon as possible. We thought that – it'd be possible to get a clean Dreamers reform piece of legislation, but apparently it's not going to be a clean piece. We need to go with whatever we can get.
Do you support term limits for members of Congress?
Oh, I'd like to see it, but it's almost like I can say I support that, but it's never going to happen, so why bother? I think it's very reasonable. I think it makes a lot more sense in the Illinois House. But we did make good changes a few years back where at least there's limits on leadership, where somebody's not going to chair a committee for a couple decades.
What about money in politics? What about your campaign? What are you having to do? What do you think you're going to have to raise to run a campaign?
Well, I think everybody in this campaign's in the same boat. The incumbent has upwards of $2 million, and the rest of us don't. And so we are relying on people like you, Rich, to put us on the radio and get us as much exposure as possible. We raise what we need to pay for gas and a little advertisement. The districts surrounding us, those people are raising upwards of six figures, but that's not going to be the case in this district. I've gotten a few donations. Hopefully we'll get what we need to get this message out.
Yeah, so given the Citizens United decision, Is there something Congress could do to reform spending on political campaigns?
You know, each of us has their own little list of amendments we'd like to see to the Constitution. Well, that's one of them on my list. I don't foresee any configuration in the Supreme Court that's going to change that. And so that's where we stand. And it's really been mind-boggling, hasn't it, since the Citizens United, the money that has shamelessly found its way into the political system and campaigns. I'd love to reform it, but we all know what the Supreme Court said.
What do you – I should have asked this earlier. What do you do for a living?
Well, I'm a lifelong farmer in western McLean County, and that's what I spend most of my time in, day out. And so the winter time's a great time to have this campaign.
Why should someone vote for you in the primary?
Well, I am the only lifelong business person on the ticket. Like I said earlier, each of us have a lot of different merits and qualities that we bring here. I bring a lifetime of business experience to my campaign and my approach to issues.
Thanks a lot for doing this. Appreciate it.
Pleasure to be here, Rich.